Accession number 13361, Mr. K. Lodge, reel 4.
Mr. K. Lodge, reel 4. You said you were at Lowestoft, Mr. Lodge. How long were you there?
Just about 1 or 2 weeks.
Did you get much training? Or?
Well, actually, we didn't do anything at Lowestoft, apart from having to change me bright, shiny buttons to black, and my cap badge to black. And we were... At the time, the issue with these newfangled hats come out, them forage caps, like a big, round, carty berry. And they took the granddaddy's offer and gave it them.
What was the significance of the black buttons and the black badge?
Well, it dates back to the Dunham Rifle Volunteers. They were black. That's the original colours. And the 6th Battalion wouldn't change theirs, or they asked permission to keep them, in which was granted, and they wore them ever since. It's the only battalion to do so.
So it was a tradition?
It was.
And that's a proud what, one?
Well, I would imagine so, yeah, yes.
So you're at Lowestoft of just a very short time. Is there anything you particularly remember about the place?
Well, I remember about Lowestoft, the place where we were at was on the open broads outside Lowestoft. And Navy was there as well. You know, the open broads, Norfolk broads, you know, a lot of boats and that. And when you walked down to Lowestoft, you had to pass all these boats to get to Lowestoft. And... But there was a lot of Navy there, Navy. And, well, just about it, apart from this beautiful mansion we was building the other night, which was very nice. Private rooms, private bathrooms, doorknobs with glass. Whoever belonged to her must have had some money. Absolutely beautiful.
Did you get any feeling as to the attitude of the veteran soldiers who had been right through the campaigns that they had been in North Africa, Sicily and so on, their attitude to being back in England and training and going through the same kind of things that units in England who had never been out of England were going through?
Well, the only feeling that I got about them was they were place to be back, and to me, I didn't see any like animosity, like, you know, about being old soldiers or having to start a train again or anything like that. Of course, myself being a young soldier, I had to take a lot of stick from them, and there was something that told me is. You had to be 19 before you went overseas. But we were only 18, which turned out to be untrue. Because we were 18 years of age and we had to go over. And there was a lot of fun and games. Anyway, they were all great lads. They had no problems with them. They were all well suntanned and they had a lot of tales to tell. And... used to learn your things, you know, what to expect. Keep your head down when you get over there. Oh, great lads. Half of them already.
After Lowestoft, where did you go?
We went down to Southampton area, Nightingale Woods.
Do you call what kind of time of the year this would be?
This would be about... April, I would think. when we went down there, beginning of April. And I remember that very well, moving to Nightingale Woods. I remember that very well, because when we went there, it was teeming with rain. And it was a brand new site. They were pitching tents in this wood. And the site hadn't even been cleared. They were pitching tents on top of the wet grass, on top of brambles. And then we slept on the ground, on ground sheets, in these tents. There was no lighting facilities, just a candle. There was even one tent had two grass snakes in. And on the morning, the squirrels would run up and down the guide ropes of the tents. Being there and coming from Lowestoft, God, it was terrible. This is what we call real soldiering now, eh? Anyway, the weather was atrocious. And then the grub was bad. The toilets was open air. The ablutions was just a series of cold water taps. And it was rough. And that was, of course, that was the beginning. It eventually got better and better as the camp progressed. It was even better when the Americans moved in.
They moved in with you?
Ah, yes. But they were actually next door, but they worked in our camp. A lot of them was acting as instructors as regards doing camouflage. And at that present time, all of the vehicles were being waterproof, traveling through the water in the sea. You know, they were doing all that kind of thing. But everything seemed to improve when the Americans came.
In what ways did they improve?
Well, the food was better, and the hygiene was better. I mean, I'll give you an instance. You know, when you come out of the dining hut, which were Nissen huts, they had sort of three water baths to wash your mess tins in, you see. The first one was hot, which was your wash, your heavy wash. The second one, which was hot, was to rinse. And the third one was to sterilise them. No, the British Army never heard of that. See, the Americans, when it came to hygiene, they were well ahead. And on the night time, we used to watch them playing dice and grab and all this, you know. But most of the time, we out the camp doing these, going out and selling these invasion schemes, you know.
What kind of training were you then actually getting?
Invasion. We're doing all the invasion schemes. We're doing route marches, but then we used to go to Southampton, get in one of these LCIs, go out to sea, travel through the night, and land on a beach the following morning, early. Land on the beach, and sometimes have to get back on the boats again and go off. Or sometimes stop on the land and stay there.
What was the routine for getting off and under the beach?
The routine was that they used these LCEs, which was a landing craft assault. That's the one that carries you right onto the beach. Then you had these LCIs, landing craft infantry, which them ones couldn't get right at the beach. They would stop maybe 100 yards out or maybe 50 yards out, depending on the bottom of the sea. And if you're a long way out, you see, and you had to wade ashore. You used to drop the gangplanks down the side, and you had to walk down into the water, which every time come up to your chest, or up to your chin, depending on where the boat had beached. And if you're a little bloke, well, you went underneath. and you carried your rifle above your head. Then you had the swell of the sea, and it used to come right over your head. You know, it was up to you to get onto that beach as quick as you could. And very often, General Montgomery was there to watch it.
Were there any accidents in landing from the sea?
I never saw any accidents, but I never heard of any accidents. Maybe just, I saw a chap drop his rifle in the water and he was looking for it. But you're absolutely soaking wet, you know. And the clothes just dried on you. I think the last scream it did when we come out of the water, it was there. It was preach the worst. No, this is the real one. This is the real thing. This is it. You come out of that water. I believe we marched about maybe 10 miles, and the clothes just dried on you, and your boots dried white. Of course, your rifle had a waterproof case. And you had wrapped all the stuff in your small pack. You dropped that up so it wouldn't get wet. You would march all this distance non-stop. Keep going, lads. This is it. This is the real thing. When you get there, we got to dig in, dig trenches. And after doing that, you had a rifle inspection. And after you had the rifle inspection, they decided to feed you. And we got a rum ration as well. And that was it. You know, this is it. This is it, lads. This is the real thing. This is what it's going to be like from now on. Yeah.
When you hit the beach, were there any situations where you had to, in effect, be defending the beach? You had to spread out and defend it or attack through it or... training, or was it just onto the beach and marching off?
The training was to get onto the beach and pass through the beach. Don't hang about on the beach. You had to pass through the beach because you had an objective to get to. You had to advance. This was in your training. You had to do these so many miles. You had to get in. You hadn't got to hang about the beach, if possible, of course. But I didn't have to do that because my case was different.
In what way?
Well, I had a little job to do. There was about four of us. I think it was about four. We were detailed. The land with the greenhouses. Because the greenhouses first, sitting every year, you see. We had to land with them to get the wireless batteries ashore with this barra. And we went over on this big ship, and they carry the LCAs on the side. You see? And these things are lowered down into the sea, and you've got to get over scrambling nets, and you're scrambling down the scrambling net into the LCA, which is about, what, a 6 foot swell, 68 foot swell, going up and down. And if you missed that, you wouldn't be seen again. It was the gear you were carrying, you were going straight at the bottom.
Before we come to that actual episode, can we identify what else you were doing in the wood? You say you were involved in this training.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know at that time that you were assaulting the beach, or were you expecting to follow another division onto the beach?
I cannot remember the exact procedure. All I know, we were landing on the beach, and the 151 Brigade was the last to land in the 50th Division. They were like the backup system. Eh? Had the 69th Division, the Green Howards, they're getting bogged down, then you've got the backup system, which is the 151 Brigade coming in, and they would have to pass through them. And the
Whilst you're in the wood, you say that the Americans came to join you in effect. Did you get on well with the Americans?
Oh, yes.
No problems?
Yes. No problem at all. The only problem was with the women. You had no chance against the Americans. They had the money in the potter. They could get on with the Navy girls. We couldn't.
You're in the wood and training, as you say, living under those conditions, which did get better. What was the attitude of the men in pretty rough conditions, particularly when you first went in? Were they critical, as the soldier tends to be?
Yes, you always get people mourning. But I think there's a lot of them just accept that, you know, it's soldiering. This is it, you know, this is it. We just accept it, you know. And we'll just get on with it.
You must have realised that, obviously, something was about to happen.
Oh, we knew.
What was your feelings about that? Because, obviously, at this stage, you must have felt it was going to be a pretty dangerous situation. The Germans weren't going to let you get there easily.
Yeah, we thought about it, but such as myself, I had never been actually before in my life, and I never knew what I was going into. So I didn't pay really much heed to it, you know, but I knew I was going into action. And then I just thought, well, I'll wait till I get there, you see, then see how I perform. But I just listened to what the old soldiers had to say, you know.
Did you find that they gave you good advice when it actually did occur, when you actually did come under fire?
Yeah, you keep your head down, which that's the main thing. You hit the deck and you keep your head down, and you don't stick it up. Them lads haven't been through that, you see. Basically, that's what it's all about. Keeping your head down and don't get up and run, unless it's forward.
You were ultimately sealed into the camp, and you weren't allowed out.
Yes.
How did that happen? How did they stop you, in effect, from getting out the camp? How did they seal you in?
Well, they were sealed by American guard on the outside, and we had our own guards in the inside. And all mail in and out was censored. Anything that wasn't appropriate was scratched out with a blue pencil when you got your meal. And if you had any civilian clothes, you had to send them home. Well, the only thing I had the civilian was my shoes, and I sent them home. When my mother got them shoes, she had a good idea where I was going. And shortly after the D-Day started, she knew I'd gone into action.
Were there any problems keeping men sealed in that way? Because obviously it must have become very boring and frustrating.
Well, I don't know. I know what they tried to do was get leave. You know, before D-Day. They asked for leave, and this was never accepted. Possibly frightened they didn't get the last part, but there were actually one or two slogans chalked up on wagons: no leave, no second front. But they were more like the old soldiers. You know, I was only 18. I'd had my leave. I hadn't been anywhere.
Were there any instances of men in your own platoon and company, old soldiers, who had gone on leave and not come back? Or had to be brought back?
I hadn't heard of any. But I think there was one or two tried to get out of camp. And well, because I should do the guard inside the camp, and we had one or two prisoners in the guard room. And I think they had tried it. because we used to have to escort them to the mess room, to the toilet, and keep an eye on them, because if they went over the wall, you were for the high jump.
Were there any men at this time, again, possibly amongst the veterans who had been through a great deal of danger and action, who were showing signs that they just did not want to go into action again?
Well, I didn't see it. They didn't show it, but I would imagine that would be going through their heads, having been through it all before, like Al-Alamein, Primusel Bridge, you know. Maybe they'd had enough.
Were there any that voiced criticisms of the fact that after all of the years of action that the division and the brigade and battalion had had, they were having to go ahead of people who had been were trained for the invasion but had never been out of England?
Yes. They would probably think about all these things, but no, I never come across that. You know, they were sort of right, well, we've got to do this job, we'll do it. Although they might have said, oh, I know somebody that never seen a shot fired in anger. But he may be on a different job, I don't know. They just said, well, this is it. This is what we've got to do. This is the DLI. This is the 50 Div. They've selected us, so we'll do it.
Have there been any changes in your officers, commanding officers?
No, the officers was never changed. No. Our officers was very good.
You moved to Southampton and you said you and one or two others had a special job and had gone ahead of the battalion.
Yeah.
What was that job?
Well, this job, what we had to do was get the wireless batteries ashore for the Durhams. To get these batteries ashore, in which we did. And I was on that beach all day. I never moved inland.
So you went with the 1st Assaulting Brigade, which
yes.
The Green Howards, I believe you yes. said. What are your memories of that journey over and seeing that beach for the first time?
Aye. Well, first of all, I should tell you, I was on that boat about 4 or 5 days before we actually went doing exercises with scrambling nets, up and down with scrambling nets. And then D.J. was put back there. We heard the message on the boat wireless, which was broadcast over the ship. And then we sailed, I don't know what time, but we sailed right through the night, so we got there early the next morning, very early. And on me, the way we, on me crossing of the sea, I was, you know, a little bit apprehensive. And I watched England go out of sight. I could see the needles off the Isle of Wight, the White Cliffs, and, well, I wonder, will I ever see that again, you know. And there were thousands then. And then it sailed through the night. And we were, I don't know whether I slept or not. I suppose I did catch a few winks. And then we woke up very early. We were off the coast of France before it was actually daylight.
What was happening then?
Nothing. We were off the coast of France. I don't know how far out. And everybody then, we had our rum ration, by the way. You could get as much as you wanted, rum. I think it was one or two, I had too much, in Green Howards. And then it started to get lighter. Then the barrage started, the warships, naval bombardment. And they were pounding away. And then rockets as well. See, the rockets going in the beach. This was, you could just see make the beach out. And then I believe the Marines, they were landing. And then the boats were going over the side, the Green Howards was going. But with me being in the Durham's and had this job of these batteries, we didn't go over there. We were, by the time I got on the beach, it was daylight.
Were you able to watch the initial landings, or were you down below?
No, we could see them. We could see them.
What, was anything coming back at you?
Not a great deal, no. There was a way, to be honest, I didn't know what to look for. There was a lot of noise going on, but there was a lot of large firing rifles into the water trying to burst these smoke canisters that were floating about in the water. They were firing it there, and I was wondering what the world they firing at. These smoke canisters trying to hit them and set them up. But by then, they'd had landed onto the beach and they'd done pretty well. They more or less got straight onto the beach and they went straight through. They had about it was a couple of hundred German prisoners standing on the beach.
It must have been a tremendous sight for a young chap like yourself. What was the scene around you with ships and?
Oh, it was massive. I never seen this many ships. Massive. And it was stormy and all. There was a very high spring tide, which had to be because it actually went over the top of the mines. Went over the top of them. And I scrambled down the scrambling nets into the LCA, landing craft assault, which holds about a platoon of men. And I got into this, and we had the batteries already bought on this batter. And then it took her from the side, and it did a right old circle. And then the sea court were brought on, which was heave like that. Well, that took your mind off the beach. You know, I was more concerned about the boat than what I was worried about the beach. And then it turned round, and then it was making for the beach. But I never come on any fire, because the beach had already been cleared. And then this LCA it practically got thrown on the beach. It was that stormy. The only thing I got wet on D-Day was up to my knees. Because when the LCA went onto the beach, the sea went back, and I jumped off, ran to the beach with the rope, had ropes, and we pulled the bar off. And the sea came in again, that was just up to the knees. And we pushed this bar up the beach, brought the guy to throw the minefields. The Royal Engineers were progging the minefield with bayonets, progging them out. And they were putting tapes down. We had to guide this butter through the tapes. And there was a lot of banging going on then. Now, I don't know whether there were actually the mines going up or there were shells or mortars. Pushing this butter was the main thing. Pushing this butter. And we got up onto the beach and we ran it into a shell hole. We thought that would be the safest thing to do. And he says, now, well, the NCO in charge. And he said, right, we'll wait here till the Durham's. They should be coming in by now. And we never even saw them. Never even saw them. Must have landed far, farther down. We just hung about that beach all day.